I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
We just got back from MarsCon, and we're both exhausted.
We both spent yesterday on planes flying across the country.
Even more so.
Yeah, I had to cross the time zone.
My flight was like an hour, and your flight was like four.
Yeah, it was about 4 hours total in the air on two different planes, and yeah. Speaking of which, just to quickly address, we did not get the chance to record this while at MarsCon. We apologize. It was out of our control what happened, but we still wanted you to have an episode, and we still wanted to talk about a movie that we were really keen to talk about. So we're going to have kind of a chill post-MarsCon talk to you today so that we can still keep with our schedule and give you the episode we promised, at least one of them. So here we are, post-MarsCon, and what are we talking about today, Tuesday?
We are talking about, since it was a sci-fi convention, we were going to talk about a sci-fi movie, and we are talking about the 1982 movie Tron. This is going to be the first live-action film that we'll be talking about on the show.
Indeed. I mean, you know, we did talk about, sort of, about the documentary Waking Sleeping Beauty, but as far as an actual produced fiction piece, this will indeed be our first live-action Disney product, because Disney is more, of course, than just animation. We all know the animation, and we love the animation, but they are also known for lots of movies. I mean, especially now, you know, we've got Marvel and Star Wars, and they're being far more known for their live-action end. But yeah, this is a big one from our childhoods.
I don't remember watching this when it came out originally. I knew of it. I really, really never really knew much of the film until, ironically, Kingdom Hearts 2, which actually had Tron as one of the worlds you could visit.
Yeah, I think I also did not. I think I saw this once as a child, but this was not a movie that started appealing to me until maybe I was a teenager, you know, kind of later teens. You know, this was very much a high school film for me, so it wasn't necessarily my formative years. This would have been released, you know, like we would have been infants basically when this was released, so neither of us had a chance to see it in theaters on the first release,
obviously.
But this was one of those that, as you got older in our generation, as you started getting older, and especially if you were a geek and you started getting into sci-fi and other nerdy pursuits, you would kind of hear about this really weird Disney movie that you just had to see. You know, go to Blockbuster and get it. It's kind of weird. You know, watch it one Saturday night when you're home and you don't have anything else to do.
In my research for this is Tron is actually one of the first movies to ever air on the Disney Channel.
Oh, yeah. This one, because, you know, because of various reasons, and honestly, it's a bunch of corporate things that doesn't will be of no interest to anyone but me, but this became one of those that, because it wasn't a big profit maker, it was really cheap to just kind of keep popping in at weird time to fill up space. And so not only the Disney Channel, but a lot of other channels would do this, you know, as kind of late night programming and stuff. I would see Tron on channels when I was flipping around at like, you know, 1 or 2 a.m. Tron would be the movie some channel would be playing.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the background and how and this is a project that goes back into the late 70s.
Yeah. Tron, if you've never seen it, and honestly, if you haven't, maybe pause it and go watch it. It's worth a look. But Tron was the first Disney film to ask, what if video games had feelings?
The Pixar method.
It is the Pixar method. It's very much in the what if insert inanimate object had feelings. Of course, now we're used to things like Wreck-It Ralph and all that kind of stuff. But
Tron should have cameoed in Wreck-It Ralph.
I was incredibly mad there wasn't like a bunch of Tron stuff in Wreck-It Ralph. I think there's a little. If memory serves, there is at least one Tron reference in the Wreck-It Ralph movies. But it's not as big a part as I would have hoped, because this really was Disney's first attempt at doing a world like that. What if video games and assorted other computer programs were sentient to some degree, had lives of their own, had their own world and interest and stuff? So let's talk about where they got the idea from.
So we've got Steven Lessberger, who came up with this idea for this movie, developed in the 70s, did a pretty much the movie itself is sort of based on Pong, and there's an entire scene where you've seen, yeah, this is Pong the movie. And, you know, they came up with this idea and made like a little animation version of it to kind of sell it to Disney, and Disney bought it and they ran with it.
For those of you who are younger than us and maybe listening, the late 70s, early 80s, when they were developing and eventually released this, was really when video games got their start as we know them today.
Video game boom of the 80s.
Yeah, it really was. That was the new hotness. You know, everybody was talking about this cutting edge technology of home systems, you know, Atari and Intellivision and things like those started around the time they were developing this. And arcades were becoming the main hangout for teens and young adults. You know, this was very much if you wanted to be cool and seen and go hang out, you would, you know, and of course we're under the age where drinking was a thing you could do. You would go hang out less at the movie theater, and the mall boom wasn't as big yet. The idea of let's all go hang out at the mall wasn't quite as big yet. So this was the major social hangout of, you know, grab a bag of quarters, we'll go to the arcade, we'll hang out, we'll have snacks, we'll play video games. That's where you would, you know, take your date if you didn't have much money. That's where you would go hang out with your friends. That's where you'd go to get away from your parents after school. The arcade was kind of at this point becoming the center of youth existence.
Yeah, so this was a perfect movie for the time it came out.
Yeah, this was not appealing to children, but this was Disney trying to appeal to kind of the youth market.
And like we said, the movie didn't really become a big hit, quote, quote, but it's, you know, it's considered a cult classic now, but I want to say the movie bombed, it just failed to meet expectations.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly like everyone hated it, but we will get into this when we talk a little bit about plot, but I'm not sure this was a movie that everybody got. It is a very niche movie. And I think that a lot of people didn't get it at the time. I think we get it now more because our generation, more than any other generation before us, certainly not any generation after us, but the kind of, Gen X millennial kind of
Early
crowd.
half of early millennial, older millennial, the like us, the
But
almost 40 millennials.
but also younger Gen X. There's some overlaps. Generations aren't really a thing set in stone. But that kind of, if you were a kid at some point during the mid to late 70s through,
Early
early
80s.
90s, I would say. We grew up with technology in a way that was unknown in human history. And so now people are more used to computers, more used to computer terminology, more used to computer technology, what some of these things mean, what they do, what the importance of them is. And I think that that's one of the reasons it's probably more comprehensible now as a film than it was to the audience, especially the adult audience in 1982.
So that all we can talk about the production stuff side of it, I guess. There was a
Well,
lot of early CG in here. I mean, early. I mean, you can tell there's like this is not mature yet CG.
there's a lot of backlit animation as well, which is a different method than hand-drawn animation that we talked about before. This is not my area of expertise, but it mainly involves, taking a clear animation cell and kind of painting on it and shining light through it. And, this is all kinds of stuff. You can look it up if you want, if that's your thing. I don't want to get too technical because also I'm not a thing, but it is kind of somewhere in the bridge between like a hand-drawn flip booky kind of animation, like we're used to with the, cartoon side, and more toward the CGI side. And as you said, they did use some pure CGI in this. It was not originally, despite the subject matter, intended to be a CGI movie. It was intended to be kind of live action with animation as well. And then they were like, hey, what if we've got some of this new technology we used, if there's ever a movie to use it on, there. So it's actually a combination of three things. It's a combination of the live action footage, and then the backlit animation, which was already a standing tool in the Disney catalog, and then also this new CGI thing. So yeah, let's talk about plot. What the heck is this thing about?
Honestly, I saw this movie and I still don't know what it's about. But let's it is a very confusing movie if you're just looking at it at a glance. So let's go through it. It's computer programs are alive. They have their own thoughts, their own feelings, and for some reason they take on the appearance of their programmer. Go figure. But the main character here is Kevin Flynn, a game designer at a computer corporation called Encom. And all of his stuff is stolen from him. All the game ideas he had was stolen by the CEO of the company, Ed Dillinger, who makes a lot of money off of it and kind of fires him for it. So the main point is he's trying to hack into Encom systems to prove that he wrote all the video games that Encom has been releasing and get proper credit, which is not a bad thing. I mean, if you made something, you want proper credit. Since he's already a computer programmer, he's going to hack into the system and try to find out. Meanwhile, the NCOM has now has a new master control program controlling all of the computers in the company, who has gained sentience and is trying to rule the world. Told you it was a weird movie.
Meanwhile, also, there's a third thing NCOM is developing.
Oh yeah, the laser, this digitizing laser that can take real world matter, digitize it, essentially send it over the internet to somewhere else. Keep in mind, the internet wasn't really a thing yet, but I mean, there's a joke there where one of the characters says, you know, to digitize them and send them to Hawaii.
Yeah.
That would save on airfare.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's teleportation right there. NCOM developed teleportation.
Yeah, it's quite weird. So, so basically the plot of the movie is Flynn and some of his coworkers trying to prove that their CEO is really a hack and not a computing genius who has stolen all of his technology and used it to rise up from a lowly programmer to the CEO of the company, and also run an end run around this master control program who they don't yet realize is sentient and hoping to take over the world. And they do this by an accidental thing where the master control program digitizes Kevin Flynn and inserts him into into the computer world where the master control program is forcing programs that it doesn't like to fight to the death in a gladiatorial arena based on video games that people play in the real world, but also there's a religious persecution angle where some of the programs believe in the real world and the idea of the user, which is really their programmer, but that the users who created them and have a purpose for their lives, and the master control program is telling them this is heresy and there is no such thing and is trying to murder all the religious programs who believe in the... Okay, this is way more comprehensible than the actual film itself.
Yeah, if you think this is crazy, we're actually making this more sensible than the movie is. So basically... God is the computer programmer, and the programs are being told, no, the computer programmer does not exist. We are what we are.
Yeah, this movie was about seven different concepts that shouldn't have been put together that were unfortunately put together to make a weird computer-flavored smoothie of... WTF. I don't know. I really do not know what they were thinking with this script. On paper, this had to be the least comprehensible thing anybody at Disney ever read.
This needed about 10 more rewrites.
Yeah. And it is full of computer technical jargon in the sense of it is what Hollywood thinks computer programmers sound like when they talk to each other.
Yeah, you know that part of the movie where the hacker is furiously typing at a keyboard trying to code?
Yes, I must code this in 30 seconds or we all die. Tappity-tappity-tappity-tappity. Yeah, no. Any computer programmers listening to this are laughing so hard right now. But yes, it's very much in that, you know, what we'd later get with the movie Hackers or something, you know. Yeah. It's like, let's make computer programming into an action movie. And this is one of the weirdest tropes in Hollywood. Computer programming is not an action movie. It's interesting. If you're the right kind of person for it. It's very detailed, intense work, but I'm not sure anybody who's ever done it or understands anything about it would call it the basis for an action film.
Let's talk about who's in this movie.
Oh, yes. This movie has an excellent cast, and I love them all to little tiny bitty bits.
Kevin Flynn, played by Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges is no stranger to Disney. As he, when he was younger, he did star in a couple of movies in the 70s.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges was, and people forget this now because he's done so many other things, and now we think of him as, like, you know,
the dude.
The dude. You know, yeah, I mean, he's kind of gone on to do so much other things and is now considered, you know, I mean, Academy Award winner Jeff Bridges. But at the time he was, I don't know, how would we describe him? Like,
he was a child actor.
Zac Efron. You know, yeah. He was the Zac Efron of his. He was that guy that was in a bunch of Disney movies and was kind of the teen heartthrobby guy and had gotten into his, what would they have been, like 20s or something,
yeah,
by this point, maybe early 30s, and moved on, you know. Yeah, long history with Disney prior to this, but this was one of his, like, could his Disney career continue into adulthood? Could he be taken, quote-unquote, seriously as an actor? And I don't know why he thought the way to that was to put on a spandex suit and jump around CGI.
A green screen.
Green screen. Today, that is a perfectly valid route to being taken seriously as an actor.
He puts on a suit and jumps around a green screen. Like, how is that different from movies are made today anyway?
Yeah, and all. But at the time, that was the weirdness, you know.
Yeah.
So, who else?
Well, Bridges also plays Clue, his little hacking program.
Yeah, everybody in this movie, that's the other thing you have to understand. Everybody in this movie plays more than one character. They have a real-world character they play, and then they have an inside-the-computer-world counterpart.
Yeah, like I said before, their programs pretty much take on the physical characteristics of whoever programmed them. So, you know, if Kiki programmed something, it would look like her. If I programmed something, it would look like me. And apparently aging just as quick, aging in real time as the programmers. It's weird.
Yeah. We cannot stress enough how weird this movie is.
So we got Flynn's best friend, Alan Brady, played by Bruce Boxleitner.
Bruce Boxleitner. Oh, man. This man was my childhood. I am pretty convinced my mother had a serious crush on Bruce Boxleitner. He was known at the time for being a TV star. That was his kind of main claim to fame at the moment. Not that he had not done movies. I don't want to sell him short. But he was indeed very... very well known for his TV work. He was known for a TV series called How the West Was Won. It was a mini series that ran in the late 70s. And it was a big thing, and he was one of the hot young actors that was in there.
And, of course, Bruce also plays the title character of Tron, who is sort of a security virus protection program thing, pretty much to keep the MCP in check, and that's why the MCP hates Tron.
Yeah.
So who else? Yeah. David Warner is sort of our villain. Ed Dillinger, the CEO or vice president of NCOM, the guy that stole Flynn's technology and sold it as his own, and... Kissed his way up the corporate ladder.
Yeah. And of course, it is mandatory whenever David Warner's name is mentioned that I must say, David Warner, you are under arrest by order of David Warner. That's one for my Mystery Science Theater fans out there. David Warner is just the best. Close your eyes right now and imagine a British character actor that's always the villain. You just pictured David Warner. You didn't realize it, but you did. That's who David Warner is. He's that guy. He was in The Omen, which was a huge cultural touchstone in the 70s, right before this. So most people in the audience would have recognized him for that. You know, You probably know him from Star Trek VI, movies like Time After Time. He does a lot of science fiction and fantasy films. Not always the best. He was in the film version of Wing Commander, for those of you out there who follow video games and such as well. But anyway, at the time, he would have probably been mostly recognized by the audience for his work in Omen, because that would have been his most recent big thing. And for people who are our age, you do remember David Warner's voice from your childhood, because David Warner was in Batman the Animated Series as the voice of Ra's al Ghul.
Hello, detective.
Yeah, so if you watched that cartoon as a child, which, what was your childhood like if you didn't, and you're our age, then yes, you are very well acquainted with David Warner's voice. He's also a voice actor of some note. Anyway, if we got anybody else of note? Oh, yeah, Warner is also the MCP. Yes, you are.
And Sark.
Right. And Sark. Yes, he plays three characters. He's the only one that has three characters.
He plays three villains in this movie.
Yeah. He plays every villain in this movie. If you're watching this movie and you're like, ooh, I want that guy to lose, you're talking about David Warner.
All right. So Cindy Morgan plays Laura Baines, Bradley's co-worker. Alan's co-worker, girlfriend, fiance, whatever.
It's also said that she and Flynn used to date when Flynn worked at the same company. So she used to date
mingling
Flynn.
Is forbidden.
Yeah, she used to date Flynn, and now she dates Alan.
She also worked with another character, Dr. Walter Gibbs, on the laser experiment.
Yeah, that is the part of the company she's in. She's not necessarily a computer programmer so much as she is a laser expert. They don't really talk about what her job is. She just works on the laser.
She also plays the program Yori, so she programs something.
Well, here's the thing, is that I'm not sure that the user and the programmer are necessarily a one-to-one relationship there. Some things that talk about Tron say that Yori was actually programmed in kind of concert with other people. Some people say that Laura did it herself. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but there are things. So, yeah.
What else was Cindy Morgan in?
Yeah, we needed Cindy Morgan is one of those that, like, not really a household name, but you do remember her if you are a fan of Caddyshack. That's probably the other big thing you know her from. She's kind of been in the background of some things. Not really super active. Mostly a guest actor on TV shows. You know, she'll come in and she'll play one thing and then move on. But she was in Caddyshack. That would have been what actors would have recognized. I mean, what audiences would have recognized her from, because Caddyshack had been done just before Tron.
And we got Bernard Hughes is Dr. Walter Gibbs, co-founder of MCON, the original programmer of the MCP. Also plays Dumont, kind of a guardian program in the Tron world.
Yeah, and this is one of those things again with, like, the Yori of, like, you know, who exactly is programming these things. This guy, he's the one that came up with the MCP.
But according to the movie, it was originally a chess program, and then...
Yeah, it was a chess program he created, so why doesn't it look like him? Why does it look like David Warner instead?
Because
how does
Dillinger
that
messed with it. They even said it's in the movie, Dillinger messed with it.
But is that, like, their version of getting, like, massive amounts of plastic surgery or something? Like...
Maybe.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, so Bernard Hughes was as far as other things he did, again, a character actor. Jeff Bridges was really kind of the big name for this movie. Everybody else is just kind of was recognized as the time as a character actor. Bruce Boxleitner would go on after this to more success and become a name in his own right, but at the time this was made, he was like, you know, that guy that also had a part in How the West Was Won and stuff like this. If you're our age, you probably recognize Bernard Hughes most as the grandpa from The Lost Boys. He is the man that says, you know, this would be a great town if it wasn't for all the damn vampires. That guy. Other than that, he's one of those that he shows up here and there, and you go like, oh, hey, that guy. He was in, you know, Sister Act 2 and other things, you know, just random. But for the most part, he is was, unfortunately, he has passed. But he was very much just kind of a character actor in Hollywood, mostly in movies, not an overwhelming amount of TV credits, but he like I said, not a lot of wide-ranging TV credits, but he was a soap opera actor. He showed up in things like Guiding Light, As the World Turns, and he made one appearance on Dark Shadows in the original run. He also did like commercial voiceovers and stuff like that. So if you were watching commercials in the 70s, early 80s, you might have heard his voice advertising some random product. But yeah.
And the other characters don't really do a lot, but we have Dan Shore as Ram.
Yeah. But the one I kind of want to talk about, Peter Jurasik as Crom. You sci-fi fans out there will absolutely realize that there is already a connection with Peter Jurasik and Bruce Boxleitner. Bruce Boxleitner later went on to portray the captain in Babylon 5, John Sheridan. He showed up in season 2 and maintained the rest of the series. And Peter Jurasik was also a main character on Babylon 5. He was Londo Mollari. And so, yes, Peter Jurasik and Bruce Boxleitner really don't interact in Tron. Their characters, Tron and Crom, never really interact on screen. However, they would interact a lot on Babylon 5. Babylon 5, good show, not owned by Disney yet, but good show. Go watch it. We talk about their actors sometimes. Go on.
I think that's all. We got
I
Tony
think
Stefano.
that's it. Yeah, I
Yeah,
think that's
he,
it for actors that we
main
know.
name, yeah, named actors. So I think that's all we can talk about the character. Let's try to make sense out of this movie.
Yeah,
Try to
this.
make sense out of this movie. All right, so let's go. I mean, we get the arcade opening and the zooming. Oh, now we're in the video game. Now we're in the video game, and you see kind of Sark. I don't think the character even had a name. I don't know if that was Tron or not that he kind of killed in the in
No,
the.
no, no. That it seems to be permadeath. That's the one weird thing about basing this on video games. Sort of. Obliquely. And when we say based on video games, we're really not. This is really not based on video games in any recognizable form.
There's no respawns in this game.
Yeah, but there are no respawns. It seems when the programs die, they call it derezzing, that it is permadeath. It's one and done. So this is really gladiatorial games, but they do suggest. And this is the strange thing. We see programs being trained for the games because not all of these programs were programmed to be in a video game.
Someone say, "Oh, I'm an accounting software program. I don't do this stuff." And
or I used to work security, but now I'm in this. Or you know, yeah. So it's very strange because it says that the Master Control is taking these, we'll call them religious programs, religious believers in the idea of the user, and you know, basically doing a genocide of these programs by shoving them into video games. They do say that there is training for the video games. But the thing is that the opening, none of the rest of the movie suggests this, but the opening of the movie suggests that this is what's going on when people in arcades are playing video games.
Yeah, it's, you know, you have the beginning, you have the... It's assumed to be Flynn playing Space Paranoids at the beginning of the game, beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Disney apparently at the time could not afford to license Space Invaders outright. So instead, Flynn has created a game called Space Paranoids, which I guess is the Light Cycle game?
I assume so.
That is, he's seen playing Space Paranoids, and then you zoom into people in the Light Cycle. That is the beginning image of the computer world, is two programs battling in the Light Cycle.
One of them is Sark, you know.
Yeah, but it is suggested that there is a human controlling at least one of these characters.
Yes, and Sark is the computer player versus the program, which is now the human player. And the human player always loses.
This is conjecture on our part. I mean, seriously, it is suggested within the movie, but none of this is very clear. You do see the human player kind of go like, "Aw."
But he lost, yeah.
But the thing is that why are these programs being trained for games if it's a random human that controls whether they win or lose? How does the MCP know that this is a death sentence? Because he is sending programs into the games in order to...
kill them. Just get rid of
them. Kill them, you know. So how does he know the human isn't going to beat the computer? Because the MCP, despite claiming the users do not exist, absolutely knows the users exist because he talks to David Warner all the time.
Yeah.
So he absolutely knows everything about the real world. We know that the MCP is hacking into government databases and collecting information and knows about the stock market and stuff. So how exactly does this work? Does he just wait until there's like
a really
bad human player come in? It's also suggested later that any program that survives the games will kind of like level up and become like the computer player instead. Yeah, again, this is such a confusing movie. I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but this movie is a mess. So yeah, we start off in the arcade and there's all this going on. Basically, the short version of it is that Flynn used to work at Incom as a programmer. He developed mainly video games. David Warner stole all his video games and fired Flynn from the company to cover his tracks. Flynn now owns an arcade
playing the MCOM video games.
Filled with the video games he created but got no credit for and is barely making ends meet. And this is our first view of Flynn's arcade.
And let's skip ahead a bit here to Flynn actually trying to hack into the database of MCOM. And, but you know, he sends his little program Clue in and doesn't really go well for Clue because the MCP
character. We assume that Clue looks like Flynn, but do we see Clue?
I mean, he's credited. Clue is credited as being Jeff Bridges.
He does the voice. We yeah. hear Clue as a voice because he says things like, "Hey, Clue, are you ready to do this?" "Yes, I am ready." You know.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Jeff Bridges to me. I mean, I'm actually playing the movie on mute in the background here just to remind myself, just so I can get the thing right. So yeah, it is Jeff Bridges as Clue, a role.
Yeah. But this is what I always wondered. We have Clue, who looks like Jeff Bridges and was programmed by Jeff Bridges' character. Okay, so we got Clue, who looks like Flynn. And then we have Flynn get digitized into the computer system. Does he take over the place of Clue?
Well, Clue is derezzed. He is, you know, the MCP's agents kill him. Yeah, there he is. Yep, I just got to that part of the movie where he crashes and he dead.
Oh yeah, you know, in all of my viewings of this movie, I don't think I ever understood that Clue had been killed. I always wondered why Jeff Bridges had never met Clue, like why Flynn never meets himself basically within the world. This is how confusing this movie is. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen this movie, and yet every time I watch it, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, this is a movie that really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and the plot is basically non-existent. We're trying to kind of talk a little bit about the plot, but really, we can't do like a... We can't do our normal shtick here that we've been doing because this is not, wow. Yeah, this is kind of an incomprehensible movie for the most part. There is a basic plot.
It takes an hour to get to that plot.
Oh, man, the first 30 minutes of this movie are just, hey, do you want to go hack Incom? Yeah, let's go hack Incom. There, I've summed up the first 30 minutes of the movie for you.
You know what? Yeah, you know what? Let's fast forward here. Let's fast forward 30 minutes into this movie because honestly, I mean,
yeah, this movie does not start until we get Flynn's digitization. So here's the short of everything that's happened up until this point. Alan and Laura go to Flynn because they have been shut out by what David Warner is doing. They don't like the changes in their company. They say, hey, Flynn was always a better hacker than any of us. Maybe he has a beef to settle here and wants to help us. Hey, Flynn, come sneak in after hours with us. Sit down at a computer and try to hack the MCP from the inside. The MCP doesn't like this. He turns the laser on Jeff Bridges, digitizes him, and sends him into the world of the computer. Boom. First 30 minutes of the movie, screw it, we're done. We're in the computer now. Jeff Bridges, Flynn, excuse me. These actors are so iconic to me, I really can't think of them as their characters. So forgive me, I'm going to keep doing that. Flynn is now... realizes he's in a computer program. At first he thinks he's dreaming. That lasts for about 30 seconds, and then the rest of the movie he's just like, yeah, shrug, I'm in a computer program. Why the hell not?
And he doesn't even know if he can get out of the computer program.
Yeah, I don't think he knows enough about the laser technology to know if the laser is capable of reconstituting matter on the other end. It is a constant annoyance to me every time I watch this movie about how Flynn, once again, very dude-like. I think Jeff Bridges was also always intended to play the dude because he just kind of gets there and he's like, it's a dream that thinks it's not a dream. Like, he gets very philosophical about it. That line is so bizarre. And then after about 20 seconds of real time being in the game world, he goes, yeah, okay, I'm just going to accept this as my new reality.
Yeah,
sure.
We're going to roll with this. So, and, yeah, go ahead.
No, that was the end of my thought. End of line.
End of line. So, yeah, and we find let's kind of jump around here because we have the MTP and Sark is kind of questioning the MCP at various points in the movie, and it's like MTP, his retaliation is to cut Stark's power, and it's very apparently very painful for Stark. Or I'm saying Stark, wrong character.
Yeah, no, I kept seeing that too when they would say Sark, I'd hear Stark.
So yeah, Sark, he so it's implied that it's an unwilling servitude to the MTP, but he's still kind of a D-bag otherwise, probably because he was programmed by Dillinger.
Yeah, the power is the other thing that isn't really explained. I think it's the idea of like this is a power flow, like we're redirecting the actual like electricity flow away from you. But at one point, Tron and Rom and I mean Ram, excuse me, and Flynn find like a river that they call like power. And so I don't know if that's like the visualization of the actual
Electricity.
electricity flow or what. I don't know. Once again, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not entirely sure this movie was written by somebody that had a full grasp of how computers work.
They had sort of idea of what this movie, what computers work, and yeah, you
Yeah,
know what? This isn't gonna.
I would have called it like processing power or something maybe, but they kind of it makes it seem more like it's electricity. I don't know. This
This
movie,
movie
man,
makes no sense.
it's fun
Anyway.
to watch. It's a great fun ride, but if you try to explain it to another person, you will have the exact same problem we're having, I feel.
So yeah, Flynn is in the games now, and they explain the whole data disk thing, that every program gets a data disk that will it kind of serves as a weapon, also serves as their memories.
And by data disc, we mean frisbee.
Yeah.
They literally just painted a frisbee and put it on people's backs. I also do not understand what the data disc is. Is that supposed to be like what houses their code? If so, why would you throw it at other people and risk losing it? I don't. It's such a weird concept.
Frisbees.
Frisbees. Your
Yeah.
brain. This is your brain on frisbee.
And yeah, we we haven't even gotten to Tron yet, the character of Tron.
Oh, wow.
We haven't even gotten there yet. But so yeah, they Sark says you're gonna be trained for the games, and if you lose, you die, and if you win, you keep going, and pretty much it's the whole reason Flynn's there is to keep playing games until he's dead. That is the MCB's plan for him. Keep
Yeah,
playing the games
and the
until he's dead.
MCP, fortunately, this is one of the few things in the movie that they state outright. The NPCs, the NPC, the MCP keeps telling Sark, keep putting him in the games until he dies. There. That's like the most coherent thing in the movie.
Yeah, and they just delete. They turn into energy, they delete. And then we finally get to Tron, and he's like the best gamer in there, and he's always the winner, but Tron is supposed to be the security protocol to keep the
He
MCP in check, and he's
also may be the Pope.
yeah.
The religion aspect of this is very strange.
So the point of Tron is that his data disk has some kind of code on it that will either destroy the MCP or reduce its power or reduce it to its original programming. It's never really understood. I don't
Yeah.
understand it. It'll stop the
Tron's
MCP.
frisbee is super important. That's all you need to know.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, we are introduced to Tron in the real world where Alan says, I've created a security program. I call it Tron, and it's trying to defeat the MCP. That is how we are introduced to Tron, and then we see him later for the first time in the computer world, when Flynn meets him.
So yeah, he's already been captured by the MTP and put in the games, also to keep playing until he dies, because if Tron dies, then there's nothing to stop the MCP.
But apparently Alan is incredibly good coder, because Tron is da bomb at the games.
Yeah.
But we are introduced to Tron with the line, "That is Tron, he fights for the users."
I fight for the users.
Well,
if he's a security protection program, he kind of does. That's his designation right there.
But the thing is that all the other security programs would theoretically do that as well.
True.
That would just be like, why? So at that point, why would you not just say, "That's Tron, he's a security program"? But there is always sort of hinted to be something special about Tron as he is seen by the other programs.
Well, the best I can explain it, he was created outside of the NCOM system, so he's technically not part of the NCOM system, so he can't be controlled by the MCP. So that's why he's special?
Maybe, but also he does seem to have some kind of a AI kind of rapport, like a Alexa or Siri or something.
Tron, play Despacito.
Yeah. Tron, this is sad. Play Despacito. But he does seem to have that sort of relationship with Alan, in much the same way that Clue has that relationship with Flynn. And the MCP has that relationship with Dillinger. But it is also kind of seems to be the thing that not every user and program have that relationship. So is this meaning that these three are an evolved early form of artificial intelligence?
Maybe.
They do have a line in there that says, "One day all computers will be thinking or for us or something."
Yeah, that's one of the lines there.
So it was always my theory that I've never really gotten confirmed, because the movie does not answer any of your questions. Let me tell you that right now. The idea was that these three guys were at the forefront of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I can go with that. So, after killing off Mr. Jurassic by Tron here, by Flynn.
Crom is a very short-lived program. He is absolutely... Well, the thing is that we see him going into the games earlier and kind of learning what's going on.
Yeah, Crom learns, and, you know, again, he's the first one we see that, you know, I'm a banker program. I'm not used to this. And Crom ends up being Flynn's first opponent in the games, in the game of Pong.
Is that supposed to be Pong?
They're playing tennis. It's Pong.
Okay. I always thought it was weird because there's, like, circles and you keep losing platform to stand on, which is not a part of Pong in my memory. I mean, it's been a hot minute since I played Pong, let's face
it.
But
it's enough Pong that they don't have to pay royalties.
Oh, yeah. Royalty-free Pong. Ah, of course. Of course it's royalty-free Pong.
Flynn is, I mean, we see Flynn, he, like, refuses to kill or derez or whatever. Like, he obviously wins the game, but kind of he's ordered to derez Crom, and he refuses to do it because he's not a murderer, because he's supposed to be the hero of this movie.
Because of course this game didn't exist at the time, but I really wanted somebody to scream, "Finish him!" Yeah, I mean, this is very much based on the idea of a gladiator.
Yeah.
You know, they even have the Sark kind of standing over them as the emperor, you know, giving the turned thumb to say, like, you know, no, end him, you know.
Flynn is essentially playing on passive mode.
Yeah.
So, but they kill Crom anyway because, hey, you win, he has to die, and he kind of sent him down there, but which actually invokes Flynn, Tron, and Ram to set up their escape using the light cycles.
Yeah, I'm not sure how this works. I'm not sure how any of this works, but...
Is the
this
light cycle now a four-player game? Because there was, like, four bikers on it? Nah, this game doesn't explain it.
Actually, wasn't it a five-player game? Because there are... Well, I mean, there are three programs, which here's the thing is if there is a human controlling them, as suggested in the first scene of the movie, mm-hmm. how are they able to do their escape?
True.
I mean, for real, it's either these programs are playing of their own volition, or they are being controlled by an outside human player with their own agenda. And those two do not mesh. You know, that some random kid playing Space Paranoids is going to be like, for some reason I just feel like crashing through a wall and driving out of the game entirely. Not going to happen. So either they have agency or they don't, and the movie wants to have it both ways, and I am not down for that. But for some reason, this version is a three-player game, if we assume there are humans controlling, because Tron and Ram and Flynn are all put in the same game. And then there are two programs fighting for the MCP. Trying to kill them. This is a really cool scene, and if you've ever seen anything from Tron, you know, if you haven't watched the movie but you've seen something from Tron, this is what you're picturing, is the light cycle battle. It is really cool. I think it still holds up today. I mean, granted, you can tell, you know, this would be, and of course, later when they made the sequel, it would become super flashy and, you know, very crisp, and the cars now, you know, gleam and shine and stuff. But for the time, this is like where all of the budget went, this one scene. The animation in this movie in general, the animation / CGI, does not always hold up. There are times where, you know, they're supposed to be walking on a platform and they're hovering a few inches off it or something. It's not super precise, and it's a lot of times, even if you give it the benefit of the doubt for being older technology, it does break your suspension of disbelief a little bit. But, you know, there's that in there. That this is the scene. If you watch no other scene from Tron, go look up the light cycle sequence, because it's really good and very very tense, very action oriented. It's a really well paced scene.
So eventually they do escape. You know, they get chased by tanks and stuff, and they find the like we said before, the pool of inner battery acid. I don't know. Electricity to get
energy programming power. I don't, you know. And they find a spring and they drink from it a bunch. Yeah. I also, all credit to Ram, who realizes he can use his data disk as a cup. And the fact that the other two are still slurping from the, you know, there's Flynn shoving his face into the water and lapping it up like a cat, and Tron is using his hands to kind of scoop little bits of water out. But I'm like, Ram knows where the good stuff is. Y'all are idiots. Why are you not following his example?
Let's kind of, I mean, they kind of split up to kind of go their own ways, because Tron needs to contact Alan to kind of get some information. Hey, what am I, you know, I'm finally out of the games. What am I supposed to do now? Meanwhile, Flynn and Ram are doing their own thing, and we find out that Flynn has a superpower, and that he can bring the discarded, destroyed cars back to life. And, or he has some kind of manipulation of the world.
Yeah, he can manipulate his environment to a certain extent. It's not perfect.
And it's not really explained why. I mean, you can say that he's because he's a user, and he can manipulate it because users, coders can manipulate things like that. But it's never really explained.
Yeah, he just... Flynn has magic powers. There you go. Flynn has magic powers in this world. So he... They get some tanks, they call them. But they're not tanks because there are other tanks in the movie. But they're... I don't know. What are the weird little clampy things called? I can never remember that.
I don't know. I don't think they're even named in the movie.
Yeah, they kind of fly and they can shut their legs together to kill I don't know.
Little flying ships. Let's just call
Yeah,
them.
little flying ships. I'm sure there's going to be somebody who's like a super dedicated Tron fan that's going to ding me on this. I'm sorry. I really have tried.
Keep in mind, it's been like 3 days since we've seen the movie and we went through an entire convention.
but I mean, these are questions I've always had about this movie. I'm not saying anything I haven't privately said to other people over many viewings of this movie over the years. But anyway, he steals some sort of flying vehicle. And he gets to the one really kind of interesting bit of this movie to me, at least when I was like, oh, that's an interesting concept. I think that's cute that they included that, is the idea of the bit.
Oh yeah, the bit. The little yes, no, no, yes, 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 no, yes, yes, no.
Yeah, which is great because of course it's a 0 and 1. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the most basic form of computer program. Mm-hmm. Which I like. I like that they have like a hierarchy of programs, and the bits seem to be like assistants to the other programmers.
Well, we saw a bit earlier with Clue.
Yeah, there is. Clue has a bit, and yes, though, yes, yes. Yes, 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 yes. I think this entire thing is cute. It is, like, the cute animal sidekick idea, but computer form.
It is a Disney movie, after all. You need a cute animal sidekick.
I wish they would have used this more. It could have been, there could have been, you know, more jokes and more, you know. Honestly, from the amount that we see, the bit interact with, Flynn and Clue, I don't know what...
I think it might be the same bit, because we never see we never see what happened to the bit that was with Clue.
Oh, yeah, it could very well be the same bit. It is rendered as kind of a floating blob that changes shapes, so, it's not played by a human actor. It is a 100% CG animated character. But I'm wondering what use bits are to the programs in the world.
Pets, of
the tri- Well, I don't know, because he keeps asking it, like, do you think this is a good idea? What should I do now? You know, so are they there for advice, or is it just like when I talk to my dog and I'm like, should I go do dishes now? Yeah, let's go do dishes now. Like, I think so.
That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, okay, so what if video games had pets? I don't know.
Unfortunately, Ram
distinct enough to be like Pokemon, where you could just like
gotta catch all.
There's somebody out there with an entire army of bits. It's like, what have you been doing? I am the bit master. they escape, and their entire idea is just, we must make it to
the MCP.
The MCP. Tron has a side quest where he has to go to an input-output tower, which is apparently the way programs can communicate with their users. It's sort of like a cell phone system to the real world.
It's Skype.
It's Skype. Oh my God, we're using the... Are we real or are we programmed?
Program Kiki, what is your function?
I have
no
idea.
You're a linguistics program.
I would be a linguistics program. I'm some form of Google Translate. I am very bad at my job, and you shouldn't trust me.
So it's not a perfect translation.
It's not a perfect translation.
So you're Babelfish.
Well, no. I mean, Google. If you are at least bilingual, and type things into Google Translate, you will understand how bad Google Translate is. Anyway,
so at this point, Ram's dead.
Yeah, Ram ends up dying in the escape. Flynn is able to kind of bring him back a little bit, you know, give him like a little extra juice or something, but Ram ends up dying.
De-rezzing.
That is so disturbing. I love how, like, you know, there's no program funerals or anything, because it's just like...
There's no body. It's just deletion.
Self-cleaning corpse, you know? It just goes away.
So let's kind of fast forward as Tron gets Yori to join the team, as it were.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what Yori's function is. She's some sort of input-output program, so I guess she's the, like, well, this is before graphic user interfaces really existed. They're only seen typing in, like, DOS or something. But yeah, she appears to be the conduit that Laura uses to communicate instructions to the laser. That appears to be her function.
And it looks like Tron and Lori have a relationship much like the two programmers in the real world do.
And this is creepy, and I don't know how it works.
If these programs believe themselves to be living beings, wouldn't they also have love and friendships and whatnot?
No. I mean, we assume, because we personify everything as humans, it's one of our greatest strengths and a bit of a weakness, but I don't know why Tron and this, like, you know, tell the laser to turn on program would have ever interacted, much less interacted long enough to form a friendship or relationship. This is the only relationship between programs we really see that is not like, oh, hey, what's your name over there? Sucks you're going to die in the games. Hope I'm not forced to fight you to the death. Do you believe in the users? You know, like, that's really the only interaction we see between programs until this. And then Tron is talking about escaping and going off together, and...
They're going to escape into the internet.
Which doesn't really exist at this point.
Have you ever seen the show Reboot?
So, yeah.
Disney created Reboot. Oh, my God.
You know.
Reboot was a complete ripoff of Tron.
I'm not sure you're the first person to make that realization. The thing is, the idea of this world of computer programs, where computer programs are sentient and have their own thoughts and feelings, sort of shaped by, but not completely dictated by, humans, is a good concept. We know this because it has been done billions of times since then. But they wanted to cram so much stuff into this movie. Is it a movie about one guy trying to get revenge for his unethical firing? Is it a movie about a crazy AI who wants to take over the world and control humanity? Is it a movie about being trapped in a Wizard of Oz kind of situation where all you want to do is get home? I don't know. It's trying to be all of those things at the same time, and they don't entirely mesh together.
No. Like, yeah, I mean, this movie's a mess. And this is the thing, is that this, there are parts of this movie that are really good. There are parts of the movie that if they had just expanded on one or two of the 10 storylines of this movie, you could have had a cohesive movie. But they decided that we're going to use them all at once.
Yeah.
I
I
don't know.
think this movie would have been better had Flynn been like a janitor in COM who accidentally got sucked into this world in which he somehow gets swept up in a rebellion against a evil computer program. Because the MCP is also a stand-in for like a fascist authoritarian genocidal government, which is also does it want to be a revolution against the government movie, is the other
Yeah.
thing it's trying to be. I don't know. I think it would have been better if Flynn was just a random nobody who accidentally got sucked into this, and then they end up using him because they discover that as a human who would theoretically be able to use a computer, he has these powers that can control a computer.
Maybe. Yeah.
Because it would have sucked the plot down to one very definitive goal.
Yeah.
Because in the frame of the movie, Flynn's goal is to find the hidden files that prove that his work was stolen. Tron, and by extension, I guess Alan, his goal is to shut down the MCP, and I don't know why. I don't know why Alan really wants to shut down the MCP because it's snooping a little too much.
His access got revoked, and he wants his access back.
But the thing is I'm not sure that he knows it was the MCP that's controlling things. Because everybody thinks it's Dillinger controlling things, right?
Yeah.
Everybody thinks he's the CEO, and they don't realize that he's in this weird abusive relationship with his own computer program. I don't know what the blackmail situation necessarily is at the start, but it's kind of hinted that he's been using the I will expose you as a fraud who stole Flynn's ideas if you don't help me.
Yeah, and I mean, even at one point it's implied that Alan knows that the MCP is doing something, that their computer, I mean, their company was running smoothly before they activated the MCP, and now that it has, the company's kind of gone to hell.
Yeah, and again, a lot of this is hinted at or referenced sort of in one line. And yes, I'm not saying this movie does not answer all of it, but
They could have cut a lot of this stuff out.
they could have cut a lot of this stuff out, but also they could have explained things more. Some things in a movie you can leave to an inference from a passing line of dialogue. It is suggested in Raiders of the Lost Ark that Marion feels like Indiana Jones took advantage of her when she was young. Because he said that you knew what you were getting into, and she says, I was a child or something. They never explain, was she a literal child? I don't think that's the way necessarily we're going to have to take that line. Although there are some behind the scenes ideas that maybe she was supposed to be like 14 14 or something when they were together. I'm glad that got cut out of the movie. I do not want to think of Indiana Jones in that light. But, you know, you can leave stuff in there that, like, he was older than her, she was younger, she felt like he may have taken advantage of that age difference. Because it's not exactly central to the plot of the movie. It just shows that they have a previous relationship and that it did not end well. That is the sort of thing you can leave to a passing line of dialogue and inference from the audience.
Yeah.
Why we are trying to shut down the MCP, which is the entire point of the movie, is left a little too vague for me in this. You can infer several different things from passing lines here or there. I'm not saying they entirely ignored it. But, you know, here we are. We are two people who do a podcast about movies. We are people who watch reviews of movies and look into the history of movies just for fun. That's why we do the podcast. And I am a person who has an advanced degree in literary criticism and media criticism and understanding these things. And it is still not as obvious as it should be to us.
Yeah, I mean,
what hope does the average moviegoer looking for like 2 hours of random entertainment have of following this? This movie is like a homework project.
Yeah, and he's like, maybe, I mean, I know that, I don't know, maybe, I've always heard that you have to be on some sort of drug to understand this movie. As someone like yourself who is on various prescriptions for health reasons, you can't even figure this out, I don't think.
Yeah, I've never attempted to watch this movie in a chemically altered state that was not prescribed by my doctor under normal conditions. I don't know if that would help. I am not suggesting anybody find out necessarily, but I don't know. It sounds like we're ragging on this movie more than I think we want to, because it is not a very clear plot movie. This does not have a clear progression. It is very difficult to explain to people. What this movie is an experience.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that, yes, it doesn't make sense, but you have to watch this movie. Just watch it once. I mean, I think you can...
Yeah, it is...
Yeah, go ahead.
It is a technical marvel.
For 1982.
Well, it is much in the same way of when we talked about Steamboat Willie.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of plot here, but they were trying new things with the technology. And I think it really deserves that. Also, there are a lot of quotable lines in this. And you have heard them even if you don't know, you've heard them probably. You know, end of line, I fight for the users, you know,
Greetings programs.
You know, there are all these little repeated phrases over and over again that you kind of made their way into the cultural zeitgeist. You know, I mean, the idea of the suits, the iconic, bizarrely skin tight spandex. Now we do them with, you know, LEDs embedded in the suits. Cosplayers and stuff will embed LEDs in the suits to make the kind of glowing lines. That was, I do believe, backlit animation that they did that to enhance the suits, to make them kind of glow a little bit. So the production design of this movie is really important. The technological advances they created in doing this movie is really important. Bruce Boxleitner is super hot if you're into dudes. So, you know, there's a lot going for this movie. I'm not saying there isn't. Plot is not one of the things going for this movie.
It feels like the plot was one of the last things they thought of.
Yeah, and it feels like the screenwriter had a vision in mind that he did not know how to portray to or get across to other people.
Got it over his head, you think?
Yeah, and of course this is the idea of the story, the screenplay, and the direction are all by Steven Lisberger. He has directed a couple of other things, but he did them in the 80s, and he has not really done it since then. He did, however, go on and just do like script writing, you know. He does have a career after this, but this is by far kind of the most famous thing he did, and it's kind of interesting that the thing we're ragging on most for this movie is the thing he seems least competent at.
Yeah, I feel bad ragging on the guy. He
even as a writer, he doesn't have a lot of credits. You know, I mean, just I'm looking at his IMDb page right now, and he's not a very prolific guy. And most of them are various forms of Tron that he's been credited on because he created the characters and the idea. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of this guy's one contribution to the world a little bit, I think.
So, yeah, let's kind of skip ahead here. When they're on the ship sailing towards the MCP, Tron and Flynn have reunited. Yori's there. And, you know, there's this big kerfuffle with Sark's ship, and it looks like Tron dies, but then he comes back, and it's never explained how he survived. He just shows up.
This is one of those few things that I think I have figured it out over the years, is that there is a collision between the two ships, and part of the ship, if I'm remembering this correctly, again, 3 days ago and very little sleep since then, but part of the ship kind of gets cut off and derezzes. And they assume that Tron was on that bit of the ship. But I think what we're supposed to do, and again, the directing and the editing don't really make this clear, because you never see Tron jump. But I think what the idea was that right at the last minute before the collision, Tron jumped out into the void and caught himself on another part of the ship that survived the crash. Because we see him coming out of, like, a weird alcove on the hull, the exterior hull of the ship, later.
Oh, okay.
And I think that that was the idea of, like, oh no, we're gonna crash, everybody jump off! And he did, and he, like, basically caught himself on the window ledge and pulled himself up, kind of idea.
Yes.
But I was also, for several viewings of the movie when I first started watching it as a teenager, I was like, how the heck did he was dead. He was on the thing. It crashed. We never saw him escape or even try to. And I'm just not sure they ever filmed that scene.
Maybe.
Yeah, this is another use, this scene, of Flynn's magic powers, when he is able to divert the light beam and create a junction so that they can skip to a different pathway and avoid their imminent doom.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's user special super user powers.
Yeah. But apparently, unlike everything else that he's done, that was took too much out of Flynn and made him go into a deep sleep or something.
But he's awake when they capture him, like not even a minute later.
Yeah, but they were like, oh no, he's used up so much energy, is he gonna... And then later, they, I think somebody says something about, but he didn't derez or whatever.
Yeah.
Why was this supposed to kill him? I don't know, like, was he literally moving the power flow of the... That's the other thing, is that... What these individual pieces are supposed to be standing in for in the real world is never clearly explained. Is the little river thing the electricity flow or processing power or like other computer resources, memory function? What are the barrier walls that they escape through in the... What are the little tank programs?
I assume the tanks are from another game.
I mean, maybe. But what is the little sail ship that's traveling on the beam of light in the... You know, I mean, yes, I get that it's transportation from one part of the computer to another. Or maybe one part of the internet to another. But none of this stuff is very is made terribly clear about what this is supposed to be a stand-in for. And I think it makes it all a little incomprehensible. We are using that word a lot. Today's word is incomprehensible.
Let's just fast forward so we can get through this movie.
Yeah.
So eventually, Flynn and Yuri escape, and while Sark is taking a bunch of programs to the MCP. And is it really explained why? I mean, they're just there to just derez them, I guess.
No. It is said that he is absorbing the power of those programs.
So these are probably the higher function programs of the company itself.
Yeah, well, one of them is the controller of the input-output tower that we see.
Okay.
Later.
I guess. I wasn't really paying attention. Again, I watched this on an airplane, on a tiny cell phone, so maybe I wasn't really paying that much attention.
But it is said, I believe, at one point, once again, watching this on a plane and not much sleep and days ago, and it is kind of said... I think that that he is absorbing them as a way to like gain and learn and change and mutate
to take over the world.
Yeah, to for whatever nebulous take a, you know, we're gonna do that tonight, Pinky kind of idea he's got going on.
Yeah.
But basically the idea is that if the MCP finishes this process, it will be even more powerful after, is what I've always gotten from this scene. Like, oh no, we've got to stop him from doing this before he gains the ultimate power and goes Super Saiyan or something. I don't know.
Let's kind of speed ahead here with Tron returning and the big battle between him and Sark, where they play Frisbee and Tron and Pong.
Yeah, it's a frisbee pong, but outside the game grid, but I don't know. It's a fight. They have a fight, and it's weird and goofy, and you should watch it.
Sark dies, but then the MCP brings him back, and Magic Wand makes my monster grow.
Yeah, this is super Power Rangers right here. If you are a Power Rangers fan, this is hilarious, because Sark actually, he gets granted the powers of the MCP MCP, but the MCP is still running. Anyway, what it means in reality is that it makes him grow really giant, and he tries to step on Bruce Boxleitner, and it is super funny.
Which is really weird, because it's Zordon making the monster grow, not Rita.
Yeah, yeah. MCP, I really do think that's where they got the idea for Zordon. Not to skip ahead, but Zordon really does look like the MCP. If you've never seen this movie, but you are a fan of South Park, this is also Moses?
Yes, Moses.
Yes, Moses is the little Moses that talks to the Jewish children at the Jewish summer camp or whatever. Yeah. In South Park back in the early days was absolutely taken from the design of the MCP.
That entire movie is based off Tron. That entire episode is Tron, pretty much.
It very much is trying to be Tron, which is why that episode is weird and pointless and bit borderline incomprehensible as well. Hey, is that the secret word?
Hey.
Well, fuck, come down and hit you on the head. Anyway, yeah, so Tron is trying to insert his frisbee into the MCP to win the game and free all the little programs or whatever. But there is a shield around it, and he can't get to it, so the frisbee just keeps bouncing off and coming back to him. Meanwhile, he's trying not to be squashed like a bug by Giant Sark.
This is the weirdest boss fight I've ever seen in a video game.
Yeah, this is a really... It is not the weirdest boss fight I've ever seen in a video game, but it's close. Meanwhile, the kind of light ship arrives with Flynn and Yori. Also, by the way, Flynn, not a great character because he completely macks on his friend's girlfriend.
Both times.
Yeah, he tries to get Laura in the real world and Yori in the game world. And, like, you know, flirts with them and kisses them and stuff.
To be fair, Yori thinks Tron's dead.
I mean, yeah, but have some respect for your bro, man. You know, like, he just died and you're already macking on his chick? Seriously? Okay. But, anyway, so, yeah. They're doing that. And, Flynn says, hey, he needs a distraction. I will throw myself into the MCP program.
And then use his superpower to slow it down. Because it's spinning like a freaking top so fast that that's what the shield is coming
is
from.
Is that what he's supposed to be doing, is stopping it from spinning or just distracting its attention so that it doesn't see Tron coming? I've never understood this part. Flynn, quote-unquote, sacrifices himself by jumping on the grenade.
Yeah.
Somehow that slows the rotation of the shield and opens up the one gap in the shield so that Tron can
use his
magic frisbee to end the MCP. And somehow this ends fascism and frees the programs. I'm not sure how the programs are now free, because they're still under the control of the users. Okay, anyway, but for some reason it's freedom now. Democracy has broken out in the world of the computer. The MCP is defeated, and somehow this makes all the computers in INCOM start spitting out printed pages that prove that Dillinger is a hack. And Flynn is the real programming genius.
Yeah.
Also, this somehow returns him to the real world.
Yeah. And we've done the entire movie. That is... Well, there is still one more scene after he gets his stuff, is that Flynn now becomes the new CEO of INCOM.
Boy, is this a weird tacked-on ending. You see him... get reconstituted into the real world. You know, the laser goes back and puts him right back in the same position it took him from. He sees the printout and goes, yeah! And then it cuts to, Alan and Laura are waiting on the roof.
For the boss.
And they were like, oh, look, the boss is coming. The helicopter lands. Flynn steps out and says, hey, come back and pick me up later. The helicopter lifts off again. And the three of them hug while looking out over L.A. The end.
Yeah.
What is this ending?
I guess because it's now been exposed that Flynn has been the real genius. All of their success is because of him. Now, this is only my interpretation of it, that, you know, to avoid a lawsuit, they gave him his job back because Flynn could have easily sued NCOM for that.
But there's a difference between giving him his job back, which was low-level computer program coming up with video games ideas. Computer programmer, excuse me, this movie is confusing. You know, he was a low-level programmer working in basically, I guess, a pool of programmers just churning out programs for this company. It is suggested that Dillinger got to where he was not only by pretending he was a programming genius, but also by schmoozing other people and potentially making the MCP hack and blackmail people is kind of the feeling I got from the way the movie is set up. It's suggested that it wasn't like, oh, wow, you're a genius programmer who made our best-selling video game, therefore we're going to give you the CEO. Because, newsflash, that's not how corporations work. But that he used his, like, hey, you're the genius programmer, to schmooze his way up the ladder.
We don't know how long this ending scene is after the movie. It's never stated.
But also, did Flynn ever want to become the CEO? It's never stated that's his thing. No, and it's not like deposing a king. This is not how corporations work. It's not like, you have slain the previous king. I guess you're the king now. That's not how this works. There is no reason for Flynn to be the CEO of the corporation at the end of this movie. None of that makes sense. Bad ending, boo, writer, go back, redraft this, come back to me. You're currently getting an F. I will allow you to rewrite it because some of these ideas are good. Thus speaks the teacher. Yeah. So, I hate the way this movie ends. I like a lot of things about this movie. The way they ended this movie is such nonsense.
A better ending would have been if we see, like, the chairman of NCOM show up and say, hey, Dillinger, you're fired because you stole all your technology. We're going to give Flynn his, you know, we're going to avoid a lawsuit, we're going to give Flynn his job. We're going to make him head programmer of the video game division. End thing, and then you can have the big hug moment, hey, we're all together, blah, 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 blah.
I don't think that's the way I would have ended this movie. I would have, yes, started with, you know, the board of directors coming to Dillinger and saying, our stock is crashing because you've been exposed as a fraud. You know, you're fired. And then, to avoid a lawsuit, what they would have done realistically in the real world is to give Kevin Flynn a credit as the creator of this wildly successful video game and royalties from the sale of this video game. I think the movie should have ended with Flynn rich, but still running the arcade because that's his passion. I don't think he would have taken a job back at NCOM. And I think now the space paranoids machine in the arcade would now read like Kevin Flynn's Space Paranoids or something. He would have gotten the credit he deserved.
He would have
gotten
the Sid
Meier treatment. Which was all he wanted.
The Sid Meier treatment.
Yeah, Sid Meier's, you know, Space Paranoids. That's exactly what it needs. He needed to be like the video game celebrity. That's how that movie should have ended. Because I don't... Flynn's idea was never to get his job back at Income. It was always just, I want people to know I created this video game. This is a very popular video game. I want my piece of the pie. I want my credit. And that's what he should have been rewarded with, not CEO of a corporation he doesn't care about.
Yeah, and then that's the movie, really. We couldn't do this movie in our normal format because it would have made even less sense than we made it out to be. I don't know. But that's Tron. Let's say this. Does Tron still hold up?
Yes, because it wasn't really... You always kind of knew what you got with this movie. You weren't coming to it for plot. You were coming to it for, it's a fun ride. There's a lot of weirdness in it. It's a good Riff Trax movie. We both talked privately about how we love the Riff Trax for this movie.
For this rewatch, this is the first time in several years that I've seen this movie without the Riff Trax dialogue with it. I missed Disembodio with this movie. I was waiting for Disembodio to say something.
If you have seen this movie at least once and you really want a good experience, go to rifftrax.com and buy their riff of this movie. It is hilarious and it makes this so much better viewing. Yes, everything is better with Riff Trax. Riff Trax is us approved, not like they need our our endorsement, but they have it.
They don't need to pay us to tell them that they're good.
Although if they want to pay us, we will absolutely be officially sponsored by them. but this movie is something you watch for the experience because it's a cult classic, because it is a weird cultural moment from the early 80s that dealt with a thing that doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, I would say... And for the special effect, it's to watch the special effects of the time, I would categorize this as a turn your brain off movie. Because if you're thinking about this movie, it's not going to make sense. So if your brain's off, and you know, maybe something to laugh at with your friends, I would.
Yeah,
say, you know,
get some friends together, get a beer or whatever your thing of choice is, get some snacks. You know, goof on it with some friends, quote it to each other, but this is not like a movie you will be pondering in any serious format for years to come.
There's a reason
fun little entertainment popcorn film.
Yeah, there's a reason this is the cult classic status, you know.
Yeah.
And they did kind of get into the pop culture. I mean, if you're going to do a movie based in a video game, there was Tron video games out there.
I am going to say that the funniest thing I can say about this movie, having all the things we just talked about it, is that this is the Academy Award winning motion picture Tron. Because 14 years after it was released, it received a special Academy Award for Technical Achievement.
I can buy that.
Where they were like, hey, this was one of the early forays into computer technology, CGI in film, merging CGI and live action. We use a lot of the techniques they created today still. We're going to recognize that as the Academy. Interestingly, at the time, it received an Academy Award nomination for Best Costume Design. It did not win. It also received a nomination for Best Sound. It did not win. I am kind of baffled at the costume design because the costumes in this are so weird. And it's basically, let's put people in spandex and shove a frisbee on their back, which I'm not entirely sure is Academy Award nomination material, but it may have been a slim year. I don't know. But yes, this is a moment in time that you need to go back and kind of try to appreciate for what it was at the time. I recommend it. If you have not seen it, go watch it.
Sure, why not? I mean, it's Disney Plus. If you have Disney Plus, just turn it on. Play it in the background if you're not really interested in it. And you'll probably have a better time.
Yeah, if you're trying not to watch it for the purposes of explaining it via podcast, this is probably a much more fun movie. So go watch it. There is some magic there. You know, and it's fun and it's goofy and Bruce Boxleitner's hot.
The only way we can follow this up is to do the sequel, I think.
Yeah, the slightly more comprehensible version of Tron.
Yeah, so
it does. Just to spoiler alert, it does attempt to be what if Tron had a plot. And we will see next week how that turned out. Did they achieve that goal, or did they derez in mid sentence?
So yes, join us next week as we talk about Tron Legacy, end of line.
Goodbye, programs. Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.